You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is adjunct professor at,
Yes, is that correct?
Northwestern University Law School.
Previously, University of Chicago Law School.
Oh, I've heard it both ways. Is it now University of Chicago? I knew there was a Northwestern.
Executive Director of Social Change, but I'm glad I was drowned out a little bit by the rock music.
The Executive Director of Social Change.
That's right.
All right, then. And you have a festival coming up.
That's right. The Chicago International Social Change Film Festival coming up September 23rd to 25th at the Showplace Icon. And we'll be showing films from all over the world, documenting different injustices, and providing people with the opportunity not just to see the films, but to speak with other individuals who took part in creating the films and had that robust discussion about what they can do to change the issues that are showcased in the films. And then finally, action opportunities, so people who are newly inspired and now educated on issues have a really easy and convenient vehicle to get involved and plug into whatever movement's afoot to do something about it.
How do you choose which films you will feature at your festival?
Yeah, you know, we have a really diverse film selection committee that represents everyone from all walks of life, and we all consider the films. We had to actually screen over 10,000 hours of films this year.
And how do you, I mean, who do you choose to do this? You can't do that all yourself.
No, absolutely not. But we have some of our, you know, our people who have been going to film festivals for a while, people who are actually filmmakers. We have people who are involved in the industry. And we also people who are community members who do things day to day, whether it be teaching or lawyers or whatever. And people who just have an interest in film. And the idea is to have as many perspectives represented as possible. So, you know, I may be biased towards an issue and there's people who can help me walk through that and make sure I'm not loading at the film festival with certain types of films. So I think we have a really amazing team, and the beauty of it is we do consider not just how inspirational the film is, and that's really important. What does this make you want to do something? But, you know, what issue does the film document? Is this something that we need to make sure the world hears about because it's not being covered on mainstream media?
Is there anything that still surprises you when you see these movies?
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, if you've seen so many hours of it, do you have something that you just hadn't, like, considered before? Because we often put things in the background, right? We see these, whether it's Nightline News or 60 Minutes, or they're highlighting something, you know, a tragedy or a miscarriage of justice, or, you know, where people are really being subjected to inhumane situations. And we watch it and we feel bad, and then we just kind of, we forget about it for a while.
Absolutely. And I think one of the films that really stood out as it relates to that, I mean, even with my sphere being the criminal justice system, recognizing just the absolute pain that you cause when you separate a mother from their child because of their being disconnected due to prison sentences. And there's a program actually available where they allow the children to spend significant time with the mothers while in prison or outside of prison. And I think seeing that really human impact that has on the family, the individual, but also the impact it has in terms of saving community dollars, in terms of rehabilitation, and how much more successful it is when people have a chance to spend time with their family. That's something I encounter every day, but to see it and see the impact it has on a human and individual level.
Right, because you could mention to us, you could mention to us right now that there are programs that exist like that where mothers are able to spend time with their kids, but unless you see the kids, you know, so I'm guessing in a documentary style, they're able to follow the families in a way. Do you remember what communities where was that happening?
Yeah, that was actually in Oregon. That's something where there's no reason for us not to emulate that program in Illinois and other states across the nation. And I think that's the importance of having a film festival like this to be a venue to provide us then with that story to attach ourselves to recognize the direct impact we can have by making a small change.
Do you think, as someone who has worked in the legal system for such a long time and you have had experience with inmates, people who have been imprisoned because of something they've done, do you imagine a way for us to change it? Do you have, like, dreams sometimes of, like, we've done this? This has been done for centuries, where we lock someone away for something and basically in confined quarters with horrible conditions. Do you ever, I mean, if you've seen this in Oregon, are there possibilities to go, there's a better way to do this? Absolutely. Are we locked into something?
No, I think, well, both are true. I think there's a better way to do this. I think we are locked into it for multiple reasons. But let's start with the first question. Right now, our prisons don't even correct or rehabilitate.
Right.
They just incapacitate. So they just take people off the streets without providing the real structured opportunities necessary to help them overcome whatever obstacle may result of them being in prison in the first place. And that's a significant issue. if I have a drug addiction, me going to prison is not going to help me become less of a drug. It means I don't have access to drugs as readily, but it doesn't help me get the girding and the real counseling and everything I need to overcome it.
Right.
If I have an issue with getting access to employment and that's resulted in me selling drugs or getting more engaged in that, the black market, unless I'm able to acquire skills and get the further education I need to get the opportunities that are available, then I'm going to have to recommit whatever crime in order to survive and support my family. And those are issues that we can actually do something about.
We are talking to Todd Belcore. He's an adjunct professor at the University of Chicago School for Law.
That's right.
Law or law school. School of Law. Law where they study school. That's Todd Belcore, and he has his film festival coming up. Tell us again the title.
That's right. The Chicago International Social Change Film Festival, September 23rd through 25th at the Showplace Icon Theaters in South Loop.
And we'll talk more about how we can make a difference in this world, whether it comes to the social justice, you know, in our communities, in our towns, in our country, or around the world. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is Todd Belcore, the Executive Director of Social Justice.
Social change.
Social Justice. I think you should just be the Director of Social Justice. You should be around, like, with a cape. Would it be SJ or will it be TV?
I love coming on the show because I'll always add titles and job descriptions and everything.
Adjunct professor at the University of Chicago Law School. How's that?
There you go. You got that 100%.
I got that one. This time, this half hour, I will. We were talking before the break. You have worked with legislation that is intended to help inmates better understand their rights. I know that one of the situations that I, when I met you, you were trying to change the way judges present the options for convicts. Is that correct?
That's right. One of the pieces of legislation I worked on was it really modernized the way in which people are informed on the consequences that they would potentially face if they pled guilty to a crime. And fortunately, Governor Rauner signed that bill, and that passed unanimously out of both chambers.
How'd you make that happen?
Well, that's the beauty of having relationships and, you know, having integrity within both parties. You get a chance to speak and tell honest.
Wait, hold on a second. What is this integrity you speak of? How does one hone that and then teach it to others down in Springfield?
Well, you know, you just hold yourself to a standard of, I'm just going to tell you the truth. If you give me a tough question, I'll be like, yes, that's a weak point in the legislation, but try to give your best argument as to why that's something they should still be voting for despite the maybe political risk they may be in undertaking.
If there is a piece of legislation that you're working on, how many people are involved in rewarding that? Is it just you writing that? Is it just you?
Sorry for my expression. I was like, ooh, that would be nice.
Isn't that a team of people? There are other, but there's like the banking industry has like a team of people, and the NRA has a team of people working on legislation. It's just Todd Belcore.
That's right.
And
that's
your inmate rights,
fundraising, crowdfunding, and everything else, so that can have the funding necessary to support the travel and support the food, the Burger King I like to eat, and all that sort of fancy stuff.
Is it because you sell this bag?
It is.
At some point, you and Craig, I don't know if I'm not going to do this to Esmeralda, just so you and Craig, I'm going to make you smell what's in this bag and tell me what you think of without even telling you what's in it. Craig already kind of has an idea of what's in the bag.
That's a high stakes game.
Just another game we're playing. What's in the bag? What's in the box?
So you subsist on Burger King and integrity.
Yes.
Equal parts. Yeah, I think you should be able to get Burger King to sponsor the kind of work that you do.
It's worth a shot.
It is worth a shot. So you are involved in a lot of different areas of social change. In particular, like I said, when I met you, you wanted to make sure that inmates knew their rights when the judges informed them of what it meant to have a plea bargain. Is that what you were telling us? And I was asking you before the break, is there movement, are there possibilities of improving the way we punish somebody when they've been convicted?
Absolutely.
Because there's such a wide range of things. As you mentioned, if someone's convicted of drug possession or drug dealing in comparison to, and you know, a violent crime, and we've seen a lot of miscarriage of justice and in the eyes of many when it comes to sexual assault. Mm-hmm. That's been very frustrating for people. But even if you do convict someone like that, let's say you do convict a spoiled swimmer and the judge doesn't think he needs a very strong, prison sentence. Is there a way to, in prison, hope to create some sort of self-awareness and what they've done?
Absolutely. I mean, the initial purpose of prison was to provide some penitence, so people had space to really examine their life and turn their lives around. But what this current representation of prison does not allow, either the space for penitence, that sort of contrition, or also the opportunity to better yourself. Because now we have a prison system that's overcrowded, with over 50% overcrowding. And we also have a culture within prison that doesn't really allow for people to build themselves up. It's more like a survival culture. So I think in order to really confront that, the first thing you need to do is release the pressure valve on the prison. So they have the people who shouldn't be there, give them a chance to get out. And that's why I offered something called the Fair Sentencing Act, where people who do have these sorts of low-level drug sort of offenses, or any other offense really that the General Assembly decides should have a merits a lower sentence now than it did previously, give those people a chance to seek resentencing. Give them a chance to petition the courts. Allow the judge to say, you know, previously this was a 2-year sentence for his drug possession, but now it's a ticketable offense, so you should be released.
Mm-hmm.
And that will do a lot to really allow some people to get out. So now you can focus more of the existing resources on the people who need the most to make sure they have the resources and services they need to overcome their obstacles.
Because one of the things that we've discussed on this show as well is the lack of will to prosecute and convict those who are involved in gun crimes. I was talking to a friend of mine who was working for the FBI, and they were telling me the rates at which people are convicted of those violent crimes and the rate at which they are actually imprisoned. Is that part of the problem? Is that there's a lot of it's easier to convict somebody of maybe, or people who plea bargain, right? People who are willing to take an offer and go, well, I'll take this, and somehow that's taking away resources from convicting our most violent offenders.
You know, I think that's something that we found to be true. I mean, when you have incentives to arrest people and you have incentives to get convictions, that means when you have people who are easy targets, those are the folks you get. I mean, we hear a lot about shootings in Chicago, but not a lot about catchings. So you hear about, you know,
yes,
33, 44 in a weekend, and we get so used to it where we're just almost desensitized to it, but not expecting the follow-up report saying and 25 of them or 50% of them were caught. And I think until we really invest in the technology and the policing to make sure we catch those individuals, it's going to be hard for us to fill our prisons with the people who may be considered the most dangerous. And I think in terms of the actual case itself, and part of the reason why people continue to engage in this activity is not just hopelessness, but the fear, the thought that they'd be able to operate with impunity.
Yeah.
They don't think they'll get caught. So
if there are no consequences, right, why wouldn't you continue in that manner?
That's right.
I also wanted to know, how much of an impact does it have that prisons in so many areas are privatized? That there is actually, I remember and I'm not sure what the agreement is with Rauner, if Governor Quinn signed something, but I recall there being an agreement that the prisons in Illinois for the privately owned ones would maintain a 90% occupancy. When you have a number like that, when you have a target number, I would think that that affects the way people are prosecuted and the way they are imprisoned, the way they are sentenced. If you have a quota, it's almost, you know, we always make jokes about police officers pulling us over. Oh, it must be the end of the month. You know, they've got to fill their quota. Whether or not that's reality, you know, I'm not here to say. But I used to make a joke about if it's 90% mandated occupancy, then I'd be afraid to be pulled over too and be like, officer, what's the problem? We have an empty cot.
No.
I mean, does that have an effect?
I don't see how it couldn't, to be
right,
frank. I mean, that's why you have the proliferation of things like mandatory minimums. It removes the discretion from the judges to say, you know, even though your grandmother was 75, you got caught with a gun, so you have to serve 2 years of minimum prison sentence no matter what.
Right.
I mean, those are sorts of laws and pieces of legislation that people within a private prison sort of can't root for and actually actively advocate for to ensure that there's an active base of individuals who are cycling through their prisons and funding their operations.
Yeah, it stands to reason if you monetize something, people are going to want to make money.
Well, yeah, it creates a perverse incentive, right? To give someone money. For
I want that to be a phrase, perverse incentive. I think that seems to cover a lot of ground. Go ahead. I apologize.
Another segment starting
yes,
all over the place here. But I think, I mean, I actually have the same feeling when you get to healthcare and things like that. When you create an industry where people make money off the misery of others, it's a problem.
Yeah, stop making money off my misery. We are hanging out with Todd Belcore. He is the executive director for Social Change and has a film festival coming up September 23rd through the 25th. And where is that located?
At the Showplace Icon Theaters, 150 West Roosevelt in the South Loop of Chicago.
And he's also, in case you're wondering about his credentials, adjunct professor of law at the University of Chicago. 312-981-7200. I was asking him as well about this article in the New York Times. Murder rates rose in a quarter of the nation's 100 largest cities. Wonder where ours is. I bet you you'd be wrong. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, where you're joined by the Executive Director for Social Change, Todd Belcour, whose film festival will be September 23rd to the 25th at the Icon Theaters, 151 Roosevelt Road. Did I get that all right?
150 West Roosevelt.
I've heard it both ways. 150. What happens at 151? Nothing happens there? I bet you they have 150 and 151. They're on both sides of the street. That's how massive it is. He is also the adjunct professor of the only one. No, he's an adjunct professor of law at the University of Chicago. And I had been asking him earlier some, I think broad questions and not easy to answer questions about our prison system. He had mentioned that he saw a documentary about reuniting moms with their kids, even though they are in prison, and that Oregon has started a program that allows them to spend time with their children, and how important that is, how impactful that can be. And I was wondering about whether or not we can change, yes.
I should add that actually the purpose of that film was not just to showcase the beauty and the importance of the humanity with connecting the children and their mothers, but the fact that the program was losing funding. Oh. So it is actually at risk of being completely lost, and it requires the support of the individuals who are watching the film to make sure we encourage that the funding be restored.
Well, that brings another question. In the last couple of years, how much has the rights of prisoners been pushed aside because of the budget problems that we have? Because there's a big line of people who need services.
That's right. I mean, in general, when you're talking about things like education and you're talking about things like healthcare, there's really no less sympathetic audience than people who are imprisoned.
Right.
So politically, it's just very easy to take away whatever services, no matter what the return on investment was. So even if you're actually doing more net damage to your economy, your community, and to the individuals, politically, it becomes such an easy way to go that it happens on a regular basis.
Right. And that includes access to health care, nutrition, health. Well, I've mentioned health twice because, you know, they're still human beings. Yeah. People in prison are still, they're someone's daughter, someone's son, father, brother, cousin. But I think it's easy to cast someone aside and say that they're no longer worthy of having access to the things that the rest of Americans are.
That's right. I mean, prison is meant to correct, not to torture.
And I think people would prefer if it was. And I, you know, and I've mentioned this before. People have texted and called and said, "You don't know what it's like. I've lost somebody." We all have pain, and I, you know, I've gone around and around on this with people. We can show our wounds, and then where are we then? It doesn't make things, you know. Punishing someone, torturing someone, does not make your wound less. Revenge is what people go for, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, what I say in response to that is it's absolutely true that pain is unbearable, and I don't expect anyone to say to tell people how to feel in that regard. But I do think that the best way to honor the fallen or the victims is to make sure that there isn't another victim.
That's the one, right? But people think, well, the person that did it then should be in jail. Yes. But to make sure that others are deterred from creating the same sort of havoc and tragedy in other people's lives.
That's right. So now the individual who's in prison, let's not victimize their family unnecessarily and forever. Let's make sure that when that person comes out that they're not creating another victim and putting ourselves in a position where our society is as strong as possible.
And I had asked as well about the history of prisons in the United States. And I was curious about this. So, of course, I had to Google. It's Googling with Patty Vasquez. But the development, and so there are various websites where you can get more information. But I didn't realize that prisons were not really even in existence before the 1700s, and it was not considered... I'm reading this right off of Google, by the way. It was not considered a serious punishment for crime and was seldom used. Instead, governments imprisoned people who were awaiting trial or punishment, and then they would receive more common capital or corporal. So that we're familiar with movies where we see someone publicly tortured, whether it's being drawn and quartered, a la Braveheart, or, you know, hangings that we were all familiar with, electrocutions, things like that. Here, Dan's on the line, and he wanted to join our conversation. Hey, Dan, how are you doing?
Hey, Dan.
Very good, and yourself?
Very well. We're so glad you joined us tonight. What do you want to ask?
Well, I just had a question for your guest. I was thinking there is a sheriff, I believe it was out in Arizona, forgive me, because I don't remember his name, but his idea was to set up prison camps and have all his inmates dressed in pink, from their underwear down to their Crocs. And I saw an interview with him one time, and he said that he has very few return inmates, just based on how it's hard to be tough when you're dressed all in pink, for one, I'm guessing. And two, he has them working the whole time rather than just sitting in a cell. And I wondered if he thought that was such a great idea. And I thought it was ironic that we're having this conversation because I just drove past the Wabash Correctional Facility in Terre Haute.
And does it have that sign, please do not pick up hitchhikers?
I'm sorry?
There's usually signs on the road near prisons that say, please do not pick up hitchhikers. Because the concern...
No, please don't pick up hitchhikers, right?
Yes.
I could never do that because it's the one problem about prison is it's never nighttime. It's lit up like daylight all the time.
Yeah, they got the floodlights going. What do you think about that? I'm assuming he, or I'm guessing he's talking about the sheriff in Maricopa County.
Yeah, that's right.
That's correct.
Yep.
And the response to that is I think shaming may be one way to make sure that people stay in place, but I think empowering it probably is a better long-term impact. So one of the things I recommend, and there's actually movements afoot to do this, is to give people the 21st century tech skill training and things like that. So we already have 1.2 million jobs in America that are unfilled right now relating to tech stuff. If we train more of the individuals within our communities to have these skills, then they can come out and get the meaningful paying jobs that they needed to avoid re-engaging in these systems. So while the pink outfits may be effective, I think in the longer term, it may be better for the individual and their family to give them more of the skills they need to be able to provide for themselves and their family.
I agree with you completely, but my concern was, like Cook County, in a lot of cases, you have people put into Cook County who are friends, they're family, and it doesn't seem to be a punishment to a lot of these people because it's just like home.
Well, it's, you know, I've actually been in jail a couple times myself, not prison, but jail. And it's really not comfortable or fun. But I will tell you that, you know, when you spend enough time there, you do get a comfort with it. But I don't.
In a familiar way.
Yeah, familiar way. Just understanding, like, you know, how to do your time and how to be navigate the different circles and things like that. But I think the most important thing to make sure you remember is it's still very uncomfortable. It's still very overcrowded. And most importantly, that we want to make sure that at least if individuals don't take advantage of the opportunities to better themselves, that they're at least available. So we can at least point the finger and put it on personal responsibility at that point versus recognizing that we have a system that makes it impossible for people to overcome their issues.
Dan, I want to thank you. Yes, go ahead.
I had one other thing I was going to say.
Sure.
I spent 15 years as a paramedic and saw the horrible end of what some of these inmates do, and I think they get cut out way too soon, and which is why I think we end up with the violence back on the streets that we have. And I think that they had it right when they went after just recently to the Latin Kings. They picked up a whole bunch of them under the RICO Act, and I think if they looked at it from that point of view and started scooping up, because the Chicago police has come out and said they know 1,400 people that were almost personally responsible for most of the shootings going on in Chicago. And if they do that, why don't they go back and use a RICO to start rounding some of those people up?
I'm actually with you on that, Dan. I think if we have tools in a toolbox to allow us to get at the individuals who are actively responsible for terrorizing communities, why are we waiting so long to take advantage of them? I think RICO can be a bit of an overstretch in some ways because that goes down to maybe the little cousin who's with the individual, so you get that felony murder attached to them and they get punished the same way as individuals doing all the egregious things. But at the very least, if they have identified these individuals, there's no reason not to try to put cases on them as soon as possible.
Thank you so much for joining us, Dan, and thank you for bringing up the sheriff of Maricopa County, because I think that's an important part of the conversation because a lot of people think about that. Have a great evening. We look forward to hearing from you again.